It's a podcast with a K. I'm Christian Corley. With me, I'm delighted to say, is James Baldock. Hello, James.
Hello.
Hello there. And you, I got a tweet the other day asking me who you were.
Right. This sounds ominous. Who was asking?
Some random person whose name completely escapes me. So if you're listening, random person, and it was you, forgive me for forgetting your name. I didn't write it down. They're basically, because they thought you were James McLean for about half a podcast. Which puzzled me, because you don't actually sound like James.
Well, I sound nothing like James.
No. I suppose possibly contrasted to me, you might sound like James. If a northerner was listening and they're familiar with my voice, and then a southerner chimes in.
Yeah, I mean, contrasted to you, we could argue that Peter Capaldi sounds rather like James. But yes.
Yes. So this is James Baldock, not James McLean. No. You'll know the difference, because James Baldock is less likely to be contrary.
No, I'm not.
For the sake of it. James McLean. So look, we're going to crack on. We're going to take a look at the Doctor Who Companion, because there's some great news items there. And why not? It's a great little site, which I think you write for, don't you, from time to time?
I do, whenever I can.
Yeah, so as do I occasionally. And there's a few of my older articles pop up there from time to time. So, last time, I do forget what podcasts I'm doing from time to time. But I do recall you and I did a news podcast a couple of weeks ago, and we did talk about Christopher Eccleston, didn't we?
We did, yes.
So, in light of that, Russell T Davies has recently been interviewed by Radio Times, I think.
Yeah.
Just confirmed it. Yeah.
If we don't know, I think it's a safe bet to say it's usually Radio Times.
Yeah, well, it was actually SFX, but Radio Times have reported it. And there's this big thing, dear listener, about Eccleston talking about why he left Doctor Who, but not really saying why he left Doctor Who. Davies has responded saying that he doesn't want to get into a tit for tat with the actor. If it gets into any sort of tit for tat, then I'm having a conversation with my lead actor via the press, and that's not on. Says Davies. What has to be remembered when the show's being discussed in the present tense now is that I was his employer, I was his producer, I have a duty of care towards any lead actor I work with, so I have a duty of care towards Chris in that moment. He's free to say, and explore whatever he wants, that's fine. This duty of care involves respecting him and listening to him at all times. Seems fair enough.
Ominous words indeed, although that word duty of care, it's something that sort of has taken on new meaning in light of the past couple of series, really, hasn't it? In that it's become a thing the 12th Doctor says a lot, and you think, actually, you kind of don't have a duty of care at all.
Hmm.
So whenever I hear it now, I always picture Jenna Coleman and Peter Capaldi standing in the TARDIS talking about lists. As you do. You
know. Talking about what?
Lists. Oh, it was, I think the first time we heard him use it was Under the Lake. Do you remember Under the Lake?
Yes.
Under the Lake, which was great, and followed by Before the Flood, which really wasn't. It's that lovely scene where they walk out of the TARDIS into the ship. It's into the undersea base, and the Doctor is completely tactless with this crew who've just lost their captain. And winds up reading off the cards, and then Clara drags him back to the TARDIS and basically has a go at him. And he says, no, you know, I'm sorry, I have a duty of care for you. And Clara says, yes, you take it very seriously. So you wonder what Davies' duty of care was in terms of Eccleston, and that it's basically him saying, this is me trotting out some words so that you will stop asking, and, you know, I'm not giving you
perhaps
the headline.
Yeah.
The headline, I mean, the headline they want is for Davies to say something nasty about Eccleston. That is clear.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And if you got that, you would be, you know, you'd be quids in. I mean, the hit counter goes through the roof or a thing like that. And Davies, to his credit, is clearly not taking the bait for this.
Smart
which
fella.
I think is absolutely fair enough, yes.
He's a canny fella. He does say, and this is interesting, this is vital. If you're someone who wasn't around in 2004, someone who wasn't reading newspapers or whatever, you forget what a brave move it was to take the part on when the press were quoting people like Paul Daniels as the next Doctor.
I've forgotten that. I remember it coming up now.
Yeah.
Yes, he was in the frame for it for some bizarre reason. I think I would have liked it, but not a lot.
Hey!
There it is, yeah.
So, yeah, and Davies finishes saying, it's a magnificent, never-to-be-forgotten Doctor. And it was an honour to work with an actor delivering a performance like that. And, you know, you're not going to forget the Ninth Doctor, are you?
No. No, you're not. It was unique. We've never had a Doctor like that. I say we never will again. I can't see them going down that road again quite so soon, having sort of a Doctor who was clearly on a defined arc, one that was cut rather short. I would love to have seen Eccleston's second series.
Yes.
Because, you remember this well. I've always said that for me, Eccleston finally becomes the Doctor 20 minutes before he regenerates. It is the moment when he's sitting in the corridor on satellite, on the game station with Rose, building stuff out of bits of wire and sort of jamming circuit boards together to make this makeshift device he's going to use to not quite defeat the Daleks.
Yeah.
And that, for me, is the moment he becomes the Doctor. You know, I never really believed in him until then. And it's such a shame that that was the point at which he decided he had enough and decided to go. Mm. Because I'd like to have seen sort of what they did with his character in his second series when he's presumably sort of more assured of things, and who knows what would have happened and where he would have gone with Rose. And I think there was more to do with the Doctor and Rose. That Doctor and Rose. I think that would have been a great series. Instead, we had Tennant's first series, which is arguably not a great series.
No, it's not. It's it has a couple of good stories, but largely it's not as good as the first series, no. If you're a fan of David Tennant, you might be enjoying all the David Tennant stuff, but, you know, on a story-by-story basis, it doesn't stand up to the first series. It takes the third series of the show to get back into the same sort of area, in my opinion.
It's not entirely his fault. It's the way in which his character was presented as having this romantic attachment.
Yeah, and there's a change in dynamic with Rose as well, isn't there?
There's far too much of that. It's a shame, really, because, you know, it's good. But yeah, I would have liked to see Eccleston doing that second series. Having said that, perhaps it's the fact that he only did one that makes him as memorable as he does.
I would agree with that. That's that. Hopefully that's put to bed now, because, no one wants to be reading about this. I mean, I know there are some people who, you know, get off on these press-based squabbles, but we don't really need any more of that, I don't believe.
Well, I don't think it's going away, sadly. I think they are, speaking as the contemptible cynic I am, I suspect that they're going to keep bringing it up until he names names, which is what people want him to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And we may even get to that one stage. I don't know. But until he names names that actually sort of is more specific about what was going on. I mean, we now know that he left because he was unhappy and because there was a relationship breaking down. Now, gradually, there's more and more of an erosion of this sort of wall he put up about, you know, keep. And he was very sort of good about keeping it to himself as to why he left for a long while after he left. And then gradually things have sort of changed. I think he's anxious to address the reputation he has, particularly among the fan base, of being something of a killjoy. I mean, the phrase I'm constantly hearing on Facebook is difficult to work with, resentful, angry, you know, thinks he's better than everybody else. I'd say maybe he doesn't care, but I think he probably does. You know, and maybe he's had enough now. And now that the sort of the facade has cracked a little bit, and he's gradually given more and more way as to what's been going on, I suspect that any right-minded journalist is going to want to push him as far as they can until he either clams up again or actually spills the beans properly on what went on in 2004.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it'll never happen, but I can't think. I mean, like you, I think maybe it's time we put it to bed now.
I think it might turn up in Doctor Who magazine. However, I don't think Chris Eccleston's been interviewed in Doctor Who magazine since 2005, so I suspect it more likely will turn up in The Guardian or The Independent.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I'm looking forward to the retrospectives they do and the sort of Hyper Blu-ray extra 8K release 10 years down the line, where they drag him back in and finally get him to sort of bear his soul on camera a bit.
Oh, he'll all be mind discs by then.
Whatever they do. I don't know.
We'll just plug it into our ears.
Yes, it'll be beamed directly into your head.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, Karen Gillan has been a busy girl. Sorry, that was patronising, wasn't it? Karen Gillan has written and directed a movie.
Yes, I hear about this. Tell us all about it.
This is called The Party's Just Beginning. It's set entirely in Scotland, and she started work on it while she was still in Doctor Who. She's also in it. Karen Gillan's first feature as writer-director is fiercely honest as it tumbles between abrasive humour and tender-hearted humanity. In a bleak Inverness midwinter, Lucy is careering off the rails after the suicide of her best friend. She medicates her misery with joyless sex, chips, and a belief in the power of positive drinking. Surrounded by bittersweet memories, she struggles to find someone to talk to or some reason to make life worthwhile at the most stressful time of the year. A poignant, plaintive tale of loss, grief, and survivor's guilt with a terrific ensemble cast. This debuted as part of the 2018 Glasgow Film Festival in February.
Previously in The Only Way is Essex.
So, yeah, it sounds a bit of a diversion for Karen Gillan.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, her post-Who career has been eclectic, to say the least.
Certainly has, yes. Did you see Avengers Infinity War yet?
Do you know what? I haven't seen Age of Ultron. In fact, I haven't seen Winter Soldier. I've got a list, a mile long, Marvel stuff that I have not seen yet. I haven't seen Winter Soldier is next, then Age of Ultron, both Guardians of the Galaxies.
Right.
Ant-Man, Spider-Man Homecoming,
you're years behind. You're only halfway through.
Yeah. The thing is, they're over 2 hours long. When you've got four kids and trying to get them in bed and a wife, you cannot find an evening to sit down and watch a 2 hour plus.
No, it's very difficult.
In my house. So it's we're very, very behind on them. And eventually we'll catch up. But yeah, I know about, I have seen Doctor Strange.
Right.
Point that out.
Like, I haven't seen that yet.
That is quite good. Although I cannot take Benedict Cumberbatch seriously with an American accent. As good as he is in the role, it's always a bit sort of weird hearing him do that. It's like hearing Hugh Laurie do it. You know, Hugh Laurie is always going to be sitting at a piano pretending to be a trumpet. I can't buy
Soupy
him.
Super twist.
But no, I know Karen Gillan. Get back to Karen Gillan. Karen Gillan, I hear, is in Guardians of the Galaxy with no hair.
That's right. That is correct. Yeah.
Who does she actually play? Can you tell
me? She plays Nebula. One of the daughters of Thanos. I can't tell you any more than that, really, because it's spoiling territory.
Fine. Okay. She plays Nebula, one of the... I mean, I know a little bit about Thanos, so okay, that's fine. Yeah, all right. So, does she show, is it a spoiler to say whether she shows up in Infinity War? Or...
I don't know if it's a spoiler or not, but she does.
Well, you've spoiled it now anyway, so it doesn't matter.
All of the Guardians of the Galaxy are in Infinity War anyway, so it's not... You'd expect her to be there.
You would expect her to be there, yeah. Okay. Yes, I mean, from what I gather, not everybody makes it out of Infinity War alive. And I don't know who it is yet.
There's actually a website you can go to find out whether you survive Infinity War. Which I will put in the show notes. I discovered it last night.
Please do, yes. I mean, I anticipate I'm going to find out before I get to see it. I'm sure I will be told at some point who doesn't make it out and what's going to happen. But it's fine. I'm not that bothered. I mean, I've said before, I think we worry far too much about spoilers in general.
I think we probably do, given you know, the more important things in the world.
Besides, it's Marvel. Everybody dies in Marvel. You know?
For a bit,
and then comes back.
Yeah.
Yes, this is the point. Yeah, she did that. Didn't she do a nude role as well?
Did she? I haven't seen that.
A role in which she is seen nude, but rather tastefully.
Oh, there was the Not Another Happy Ending where she's a writer, isn't there?
I think
that one.
It might have been that.
Yeah, and there's also obviously the new Jumanji movie as well she's in.
Yes, a lot of people complained about that, not knowing anything about her character. And then when it came out, I said, oh, okay, I can see why she is dressed the way she is, you know. So.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
People do like to complain these days, don't they?
Oh, tell me about it.
Anyway. Which is a topic we might be coming on to in a moment.
We might well be coming on to it in a moment, but yeah. No, but this certainly, I mean... We say eclectic, but it is a bit of a departure for her sort of a bleak Inverness drama. So did you say she's in it? Is she starring in it, or is it like a supporting?
She appears to be the star. Yeah.
Okay.
The main character. So that'll be interesting. Now the photo used on Doctor Who Companion has Karen with rather darker hair, more of a sort of a sort of mahogany sort of a colour rather than the beautiful auburn that we're more used to seeing Karen Gillan. So I don't know if that's a still from the movie or what. I do know something about Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and Infinity War. There isn't a spoiler, unless you're into your makeup and you want to read this bit yourself. I'm going to spoil it for you. In the first Guardians of the Galaxy film, Karen Gillan had her entire head shaved. But apparently for Guardians 2 and Infinity War, just the sides were shaved.
Oh, I see.
So there you go. So that's that. So that's worth looking out for. I don't imagine it's going to storm the cinemas, but on the other hand, I imagine it will turn up on TV and will certainly be worth watching.
And possibly reviewing here as well.
Possibly.
I mean, I suspect this is a project, if she's been working for as long as we say she has, it sounds like it's something that's quite dear to her heart.
Yeah.
And you don't expect those sort of things to light up the box office or to bring in the numbers, but, you know, you do them because they're important to you.
Yes.
I say fair play to her if she's doing that. And, yeah, I mean, she's a very, very talented actress. She was great in Doctor Who. She had this wonderful thing she did with her eyes.
Looking?
Yeah, a lovely... A lovely expressive face, and that's just sounds almost as patronising as she's been a busy girl. But the way it is, she acted with her whole face, didn't she?
She did, yeah.
I think that was what I loved.
Good reaction, very reactive expression.
The way you could look at Amy, and you knew she was thinking about 100 different things at once.
Yeah.
But also focusing on the Doctor, and that was what made her a very interesting character.
And an excellent foil for Matt Smith as well.
Definitely. Their first season in particular, they sparked off each other beautifully.
Yeah.
And never quite captured that dynamic once Rory joined the TARDIS full time. Not to say anything about Arthur Darfield, because he was also very, very good. However, I liked it best when it was just the two of them. I think the way they worked together was beautiful. Even though, you know, we're supposed to hate Amy for abandoning her fiancé like that, but, you know.
Yes. Okay, let's lighten the mood somewhat before we get bogged down with stuff. we talked about William Hartnell's first ever Doctor Who scripts last time.
Yes.
And the questions over its authenticity. Well, whether the questions or not, the buyer didn't seem to care. They spent £7,500 on it.
Now, remind me, Christian, what was the expected sale price for this? And is this close or not close or what?
I think it was five.
Right, okay. Yes, I seem to remember we might have mentioned five, but I couldn't remember.
Yeah, so it's gone for 6,200 plus fees, taking it to 7,500 in total.
Okay. Do we know anything about the buyer, or do they keep these things sort of anonymous?
They wish to remain anonymous. However, they said, I was eight and went to see my grandfather in the summer. He gave me it because I was a Doctor Who fan. I read it. There was some technical stuff in there that I didn't understand, but it stayed with me when I moved around the country. So it seems that the seller, beg your pardon, that was, not the buyer, their grandparents sometimes got hold of it. It featured on the Antiques Roadshow in 2017, where Chris Yeo said, this is the very first Doctor Who story. It's the DNA of Doctor Who, the genesis of the programme, which makes it very important. So, so it's gone. So if you were hoping to maybe catch it on a second auction, if it didn't sell, it sold, so it's off.
Yes, there was no buy it now option.
That's right. No, there wasn't. No, it wasn't on Fleabay. No, it was on proper auction house. Doctor Who returns to Sheffield this week as well. Back in the north.
Do we know where in Sheffield? I mean, Sheffield's a fairly big place.
Or as I call it, the south.
The south.
South Yorkshire.
You're not that far north, you know.
I'm far enough north to call Sheffield south.
Yes.
Let's have a look. Sites near Park Hill Flats have been earmarked by the production crew for more adventures with Jodie Whittaker's Doctor. Park Square Roundabout is where signs have been spotted. It's a grade two listed building, which was previously used in February, so it appears to be around the same area that they've previously used.
Yeah.
Perhaps for different weather, I don't know.
Who knows?
Who knows? So so that's still going on, and, you know, we're 4 months away from a new series.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. It's
which really... I imagine they'll probably have mostly wrapped up by the time of a particularly important convention in sort of June, July time.
Yes. Do we anticipate new footage at some point? I mean, is there
new footage? Footage, well, surely.
Yes. Okay. Well, we've seen a logo, kind of. You know, heard a little bit of the yeah, I know.
I haven't heard anything. No. But I haven't heard anything about a lot of things to do with this. So, which is unusual with Doctor Who.
Yes. Unusual, but perhaps not a bad thing.
Not unwelcome, no.
In the sense that, you know, I mean, it can be a little bit frustrating when you're so desperate to find some sort of publishable copy and there really isn't anything to talk about.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's sort of nice when you have that sense of mystery.
It was like that in 2004 and 2005. You know, there's nothing, you know, Doctor Who's been made, but there's very little you could find to write about it. Very little.
Do you know what? I don't remember anything about when they were filming the original, the original Arrive series. And I think it was all done under the Torchwood anagram, wasn't it?
Almost all of it, yeah.
Yeah, simply to keep it as under wraps as possible. You certainly don't. I mean, we didn't have social media then the way we have now. MySpace was about as much as you had, you know. And there certainly wasn't the sort of the ability to upload.
No, you'd go to Outpost Gallifrey, which is forerunner of Gallifrey Base for you younger listener, and Usenet. Those were the two main places, and you know, no one went on Usenet. Because it was just a terrible interface and system. So, yeah, it was mostly Outpost Gallifrey in those days.
Yes, it was.
And it was full of rumours. I remember, going back to 2005, as we did earlier, the Parting of the Ways.
Yeah.
The week between Bad Wolf and the Parting of the Ways, someone added a casting item to the Parting of the Ways on IMDb, stating that Davros would appear, played by Red Dwarf's Norman Lovett.
I vaguely remember that. I think it showed up in another forum I was frequenting at the time. Right. Yes. Did anybody fall for it?
I may have half fall for it. But,
Well, yes, but you were younger. You know.
I certainly was. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I know. It's. I remember. An old friend of mine once pranked her husband, well, or boyfriend as was then, one April Fool's Day by telling him that. They were bringing back Doctor Who, which was then something they hadn't done yet, by casting Caroline Quentin.
Oh, good God.
Which would have been interesting. yes. Talking about the 13th Doctor, though, do we know... I mean, we know various things have slipped out. We know that... what's his name? He's playing James the First. We know that they're going to do the Rosa Parks story. We know that India is going to be involved somehow. Do we know for a fact whether Whittaker is going to be keeping her accent?
I think she is.
Okay. I was just thinking, because we could always have a scene where, you know, the Doctor sort of speaks in her home county's voice, and then they go up to Sheffield, not just for filming, but actually set an episode in Sheffield, and she defaults to the Northern, you know. Rather like Tennant did in Tooth and Claw.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting having a Northern Doctor again.
Aye.
Where's the flat cap?
Happen. Whippet's got it. Yeah. I do have to work on my Northern accent occasionally.
Should we probably stop this because we are probably offending our one Northern listener.
The one listener. We should release a Big Finish play called The One Listener. Speaking of Big Finish, out now, original Torchwood team return for Big Finish's Believe.
Original as in all of them?
Yeah, Barrowman, okay. David Lloyd, Gorman, Maury, Miles.
Oh, wow. Okay. What's the story in Torchwood 3?
What's the story in Torchwood Maury.
Yes. I couldn't quite bring myself to do it.
Oh, you should have done.
Maybe he will. Yeah, and you did. Yes, thank you for not letting me down. So is there a synopsis that we can...
There is. The Church of the Outsiders believe that mankind is about to evolve to reach into the stars. Owen Harper believes that Torchwood has to do whatever it takes to stop them.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah. I think that's quite interesting synopsis.
Were they just cults again, then?
Say again?
Were they just cults, by the sound of it?
Yes, it sounds like a cult. Apparently Arthur Darvill's in it as well.
Okay, fair enough.
No, so that's good. A few other people are in there. It's by Guy Adams, who says it's been 10 years since there's been an adventure featuring Jack, Gwen, Yanto, Tosh and Owen, and coming up with something big enough and complex enough to need them was great fun. After all, taking down an entire religion isn't easy, but if anyone can do it. Now, that's coming from Big Finish. There's also something else coming from Big Finish, which Doctor Companion hasn't mentioned yet, but which we probably should mention. And that is the return of the Master.
Yes.
I don't mean any Master.
No.
No. I don't mean... Obviously, there's two Masters I don't mean. It's neither of them, clearly. It's not just Derek Jacobi. It's not just Michelle Gomez. It isn't at all John Sim, I should note, unless they're keeping that under wraps. No, it's only Eric Bloody Roberts. Which certainly took me by surprise when I saw that.
Eric Bloody Roberts, who goes under the stage name of Eric Roberts, I believe.
Yeah, that guy, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I know. 22 years after featuring in Doctor Who the movie with Paul McGann, Eric Roberts is back as the Master. It is. When I read it, I did a double take and thought, no.
Yeah.
Sure. But yeah. Yes, apparently so. And we should probably tell them who they are going up against.
River Song.
They don't have a chance, really, do they? She will wipe the floor with all of them, I think.
Which is a shame.
Yeah.
For various reasons. I am glad Derek Jacobi's doing a lot of Master stuff, though.
Yes. I'm very, very behind on Big Finish listening. I'm still sort of working my way through. I think the last one I listened to was Castle of Fear, which is sort of donkey's years old. Do you know what I mean?
No, I wouldn't like to say when I last listened to any Big Finish, to be honest with you. I have them ready to listen to in the car for long journeys,
yes.
but often it turns out to be something else or music, to be honest with you.
Yes.
So,
usually it's something Disney related.
Well, we do have some Disney sing-along discs in the car, yes. We also have a Zingzilla's disc.
Zingzilla's?
Yeah, the Zingzilla's disc, which nicely takes me back to CBeebies and back to Derek Jacobi, who...
Yes.
I absolutely adore listening to on In the Night Garden, saying all those nonsensical words.
There is actually... I remember my father talking to me about that, and there is a video that we should embed at this point, because a while back... I remember... When The Night Garden came out, my father was watching it with our children, who were then sort of only two and only a few months old. And they were mesmerised by it. But Dad was sitting there saying, what on earth is this rubbish? I mean, what was... This is Cadfael doing this, you know. What was Derek Jacobi thinking when he made this? I said, probably the money. Yeah. I suspect he probably got reasonably well paid for doing a couple of days voiceover.
Yeah,
And he's amazing in it. He really is amazing to listen to.
He is. It's quite an experience listening to it.
Yes, but a while back, when they did the War Master set, I actually managed to extract certain choice pieces of audio and graft them onto scenes from In the Night Garden.
Really?
Yes. I call it the War Master in the Night Garden.
Is it available on YouTube?
It is available on YouTube, and I will send you a link which we can put in the show notes.
Excellent.
Just because, it was one of the strangest things I've ever done. I mean, it's all in black and white, and you can if you're listening to this, folks, then do please have a watch of it because, frankly, I need the hit count. it's no one watches my stuff on YouTube. Everybody watches it on Facebook, which is okay. But yeah, it's strange to sort of see him playing such opposite roles. And one way I found out of freaking out my children was to play them the Utopia episode, which sort of he famously regenerates into John Sim right at the end, but has a few sort of choice moments as the master before he goes. So we would play that to them, and then I'd put them to bed and stick the In the Night Garden CD on the CD player in their bedroom, just to see what happened. The result was mostly nightmares, but that's fine. What did you think? I mean, presumably, have you listened to the War Master set? The one that they released sort of at the tail end of last year?
No.
It is interesting stuff. The problem I have with it is that, if anything, he's not terribly mastery for a lot of the stories. It's very much about him, if not necessarily being nice, but certainly hiding and putting up something of a front. So you do get to see the sort of the nasty side that we glimpse at the end of Utopia, but there is not nearly enough of it, to be honest. But it's an interesting set, and he even gets a sort of companion who is frankly dull as ditchwater, but has a story of his own in which he shines, which is arguably the high point of the entire set. So it ends, and I thought, oh, I hope that's not it. I hope they can do something else with him. So the news that he's coming back to Big Finish is sensational. I gather also he's doing something with UNIT. Is that right?
Say that again, sorry?
I heard he was turning up in some of the UNIT stories at some point.
Oh, I haven't heard that. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. So it's Jacoby, to be clear, it's Jacoby, Gomez,
Pratt,
Roberts, and River Soul.
And Peter Pratt.
And Peter Pratt. Peter Pratt, gosh, yes, okay.
No, it's not. It's Jeffrey Beavers. What am I talking about?
Yes, Peter Pratt's dead, I think, isn't he?
Yes.
They've got Peter Pratt in, I'd be amazed, but yeah. Beavers I can go with, yes.
Yeah. Jeffrey Beavers, yeah. Who, yes. I always think they're the same master anyway, so... In different Beavers, stages of... different stages of decay.
I can't remember. Which one is Deadly Assassin and which one is Keeper of Draken?
Jeffrey Beavers is Keeper of Draken.
Right, gotcha. Yeah, Peter Pratt was Deadly Assassin. Yes, okay.
Because if he's ended up like that twice, then that's a mistake, Master.
Yes.
You know, you should have avoided that.
Yes, I think it is safe to assume that the Beavers stroke Pratt Master are supposed to be the same incarnation. Just...
Yeah, I think
and
so.
And presumably, are they the... Is it the end of the Delgado incarnation? We're never quite clear on that, are we?
No, it's never explicitly stated. I think some of the journals from Virgin back in the day, I think they kind of suggested that it was the Delgado master at the end of his life.
Yes.
But the entire character and temperament is different to the Delgado master, so... There's this circular bit as well, isn't there, which came about after the TV movie.
Yes.
Which I particularly enjoy, this idea that the Pratt Beavers master is the Roberts master after having been sucked through the Eye of Harmony. But the fact that the Eric Roberts master is now about to reappear kind of kills that.
Yes, it does, really, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
So to be clear, the Roberts master is the master at the very beginning of his timeline. Or at least in terms of his interaction with the Doctor.
In that theory? No. Yes. No. Oh. In that theory, so you go Delgado, Pratt / Beavers.
Right.
No, you don't go that. No, you go... Where do you go? You go Delgado, then Delgado vanishes, so we don't know. Then the Doctor encounters Pratt / Beavers, who is the remains of the Roberts Master after he's been pulled through the vortex.
Ah, I see. So all the stuff with the... So basically, Draken and the Deadly Assassin take place in the Master's timeline after the McGann movie.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes, it's funny, because we always assume that there is a linear progression with... The master. Yeah. They always seem to move forward in more or less in chronological order. the one time this didn't happen that we know of, certainly on TV, is the most recent appearance from Sim.
Yeah.
You know, in that yeah, that takes place prior to whoever he becomes after that. We don't know for a fact that it's Missy.
No, we don't.
No, I mean, they could easily shoehorn in another one. I always got quite amused by the people who said, "Oh, I can't believe Missy's dead." After the Doctor falls, to which the other response is, "She
probably not.
You can never kill off that character. There's always an out, get out."
Yeah. Yes. Okay, let's pop back to the Doctor Who companion. What are we going to talk about next? Well, I think we're there now, aren't we? We're at Doctor Who magazine. Well, for some people, this might be the main event of this week's podcast with a K. Doctor Who magazine issue 525 is out, and it features some interesting things. It's got John Pertwee on the cover to placate the older fan. It has a quote from Michelle Ryan stating that casting Jodie is the right step, which I'm not, you know, possibly veering into the world of condescension again there. But most importantly, there is a new time team. I say this most importantly. I'm going to be honest. I don't care that much. But a lot of people do care about this. There is a new time team. The time team has regenerated just in time to revisit landmark episodes from the series history. And, you know, if you like reading about people, if you like a text version of Gogglebox, where the only show on offer is Doctor Who, then that might be for you. The first time team felt like it was getting tired around the time they got to the Sixth Doctor. So, and they've already had a second time team, so this is a third time team. So, you know, it is an idea that was kind of ripped off SFX magazine, who had their On the Sofa thing.
Yeah.
Whether or not the new time team works for you or not is another matter entirely. But because the reason that a lot of people are talking about this is because of, I suppose, people are criticising it because either they weren't picked or because they don't like the diverse collection of characters, people, personalities that are involved with the new time team. I think it's safe to say.
Tell us a little bit about this diverse collection of people, personalities involved with this new time team, because I've got to be honest.
Are you one of them?
I stopped buying Doctor Who magazine about 5 months ago.
Okay.
Not for any reason. Not out of protest, not out of any other reason other than that they were sitting on my shelf unread.
Yes.
I was spending £6 a month on a magazine that I was buying for the sake of having it and flipping through to see if I wound up in that month's YouTube column and never did.
I spent 18 months just reading the comic strip. Then I thought, I should probably not buy this anymore. Cause...
They show up in the library as well. And I think, can I be bothered with this really? So no problem with Doctor Who magazine and whatever they do with it, but I wasn't reading it, so I sort of stopped. So who have they... I can't even remember who the old time team was.
Well, the original one was Clayton Hickman and Peter Ware and Jack Rayner and the other fella.
Yeah, him.
Richard.
Clayderman?
No, not Richard Clayderman. The gentleman who does the excellent Nothing at the End of the Lane, among other things, Doctor Who related.
Okay, do you know, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. Tell us who the new team are, and I will look him up.
Oh, you want me to tell you the new time team are? Oh, good Lord. Well, this is going to take some editing. Hold on a moment, because keyboard's gone crazy. New time team. Well, dear listener, contrary to your expectations, the new time team is not headed by Tony Robinson. New edit here. The new time team features a lot of faces, and if there is a list of names, I haven't been able to find it yet. There are probably about, well, let's have a look, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 people in the new time team, which includes Crystal D, who some Doctor Who fans may know of. And various members of the team have been tweeting their delight. We've got Jacob Dudman, actor impressionist for Big Finish's 10th and 11th Doctor Who Chronicles. Two members of the Time Ladies, Beth Axford and Kezian Newson. BBC News broadcast journalist Gerard Groves. Claudia Bullin. Luke Cutforth. Antoinette Bell. Dan James Frank, who is Claudia's brother, apparently. Miles Hall. Sam Saffold. Zainab Sheriff. They are the new time team. The 12-member team has an average age of 22, with 10 of the 12 under 25. The oldest two members are 20. Get this, 6.
Wow. Okay.
So that's the new time team in Doctor Who magazine, which, you know, they're vloggers, most of some of them, if they're not bloggers. Are already working for the BBC, such as with Crystal D and the one I mentioned, Gerard Groves.
I see. So do we know why people are so upset? I think you voiced discontent, or you mentioned discontent a moment ago. What are people unhappy about?
There's the youthful aspect to this, the youth aspect to this, where... Now, people are within a particular age group. I think that's largely, as well, possibly as well, the number of people that are involved. And there is perhaps, it's probably fair to say, that there are some Doctor Who fans who aren't particularly enamoured with Crystal D.
No, I have to confess, I don't really know an awful lot about Crystal D.
Well, she did Doctor Who the Fan Show for the BBC, and she's now apparently embedded at BBC Worldwide, I think it is. I think there's certain things. Is why bother? It's, you know, because it has been done. If it hadn't already been done in Doctor Who Magazine, it gets done on YouTube all the time. Doctor Who Magazine itself seems to have aged down considerably over the past few months since the new editor took charge.
And when you say age down, do you mean in terms of the people working for it or the audience?
The audience. It's there's a lot of sort of fan art and stuff like that coming in, as they used to be in the days of Weekly. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm not saying any of this is a bad thing. However, if you're a long-running magazine that basically survives on fandom alone, and you've survived a period of time where there was no show to talk on air to talk about, then is it wise to potentially actively shrink your own audience, which is what this could be? And yes, it could be bringing in a new audience, but if you've already got a very loyal audience, is it a good idea to turn them onto something else? Is it a good idea to leave them thinking, well, do I want to spend my £5, £6 a week on this when I could be reading SFX instead, if I could be reading something else I'm interested in instead? If there's a portion of this magazine which I'm going to skip by, I don't like the comic strips either, there isn't a feature in it this week that I'm interested in, not keen on John Pertwee's Doctor, I'm more of a Pete Davidson man. Are you going to pick this issue up? Are you going to pick up anything with a new time team in? It all seems like a rehash and a reformatting that doesn't need to be done in many ways, I think. What do you think?
It's a potentially hazardous issue. Last time you and I did a podcast, I seem to remember we actually discussed the possibility of whether or not Doctor Who was a kids' show.
Yes, we did, yes.
And I hold to my assertion that on many levels it is.
Yes.
I'm not backing down from that. Having said that, we need to recognise there is an older audience. And one of the nice things about Doctor Who magazine was that it catered for that older audience. The younger the younger people, I don't want to use the word millennials, but let's use the word millennials, and I've done it because that's the elephant in the TARDIS, isn't it? Yeah, the millennials have got YouTube. You know?
Yeah.
They've got the fan videos. They've got the reaction videos. I mean, reaction videos, like I said, most pointless thing on YouTube next to unboxing. I don't want to know what, you know, your reaction was to this episode particularly, but it is what it is, and they're very popular. So that seems to sort of cater for that area of the market. One of the things I did like about Doctor Who magazine when I got around to reading it was that there was a diverse collection of viewpoints that reflected my own and my own experience as somebody who was around, you know, for the 80s and remembered why Doctor Who got cancelled.
Yeah.
Rather than looking at it in terms of the way that some younger fans look at it, which is, oh, BBC threw it away. Didn't know what they had. No, they knew exactly what they had, and that is why they threw it away in 1989, because it had been not very good for a long time, and it wasn't bringing in the numbers. I think there is a deep-rooted fear of treating the show with a certain reverence, and I do worry that that is the direction that a youthful stance may take. Simultaneously and paradoxically, it's going to be possibly mixed with a lot of people sitting on the sofas laughing at the dodgy effects.
Yeah.
Which we could do without, really.
Cause, I think, I mean, so, yeah.
We all know that the Mirka was a load of crap. Yeah. And it's disabled with a kung fu kick. I mean, it was a low point. We know that, but we don't necessarily dwell on it. You know, it's filler in a story which is also largely filler. And maybe, and it remains to be seen what they'll do, but if that's the direction they wind up going in, maybe it's a clear indication that it's time to knock it on the head and maybe just watch the stories and enjoy them on yourself rather than taking the word of 12 YouTube bloggers.
Do you know, I've never really got the hang of communal viewing of TV shows. I have watched movies in theatres, obviously. And do you know what people tend to do in the theatre? They tend to shut up.
Yeah.
When you're doing it at home in front of a TV, it's like I ask the person next to me, who is invariably my wife, to be quiet during Doctor Who. It took a long time for this to work. And it possibly doesn't work now. If you really want to watch something, if you really want to engage with a show, then you do need that silence in order to focus on the dialogue, the atmosphere within the show, whatever. So, I mean, obviously, I don't know. Are they really going to have 12 or 13? Yeah, 12. There's 12 of them. Are they going to really have 12 people watching the episode at the same time in the same place? Well, I doubt it, because the original time team didn't. They just wrote it as if they were all in the same place.
I was going to say, just to 12 people, does that necessarily mean... I mean, are they going to circulate them? If there's 12 in the time team, does that not mean they can then sort of watch one or two stories?
Well, you see, that's the thing. And that brings a new angle to the time team. But at the same time, you're talking to someone... As writers, they are then talking to one reader who is going to have a consistent viewpoint of Doctor Who, or a more consistent viewpoint of Doctor Who or anything else than a rotating team of three or four people watching Doctor Who. So you might have a team A watching An Unearthly Child, and then team B watching The Daleks, and you're going to have a completely different viewpoint of the same era. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it depends what you want from Time Team. Is it supposed to be reflective of Doctor Who as a constant thing for the reader? Or is it turning Doctor Who into something that's more of a consumer-based item rather than what it is for a lot of fans still, which is more of a kind of... the recordings of someone's adventure, one person's adventures over 50 years.
It's an interesting conjecture.
It is, yeah.
Main to be seen how it works in practice. But going back to something you were saying a moment ago, you're talking about having a communal TV experience. I've got a friend who watches quite a lot of sci-fi with his wife and some other stuff without her, depending on what he thinks she'll enjoy and whatnot. They watch Doctor Who together, and he says he allows her a maximum of five questions or remarks. that is all she is allowed. Otherwise, he can't hear a word of it.
Yeah.
He said, it was her who was telling me this. She said, I expect it's the same in your house, isn't it? I said, in my house, it's the opposite. I actually have to have my wife with me when there is a new episode on. Because I make a point of reviewing each episode, always in text. I'm old-fashioned like that. I cannot ever get the hang of vlogging, and I probably never will. That's fine. But our podcast is the closest we get to it. But the best bits of my reviews are almost invariably little quips that she's dotted around during the episode.
Mm.
I am often watching with something approaching reverence. She will watch it as a cynical fan, I like to use the word. I mean, she enjoys it, some of it, and thinks some of it is diabolical. And actually, often we tend to agree on the same episodes we enjoy and don't enjoy. But she's got a way of putting things that I'll then sort of write down and drop in. So she's kind of, I'm not saying she's a muse, but she is amusing. Yeah, so I like having her there when she. So that is a communal experience. And what we were doing during Series 10 is I was watching the episodes with her, streaming from the laptop on a preview site on the Wednesday, so I could get a review done.
Mm.
And then I'd watch them again on Sunday afternoon with the boys. So that was that dual experience, and each time it was communal, family based. As arguably, Doctor Who should be. If you have a family, watch it.
Yeah.
If that family is old enough to enjoy it, and you know, it was always fun. And but there is a downside to that in that it would get frustrating if there was an episode I really enjoyed that they were clearly not engaged in, and you kind of think, yeah, that's a shame. I kind of wanted you to like that more than you did. But
I wonder if it's really can be measured by how much you want to engage with Doctor Who. I wonder. It's an interesting one. Going forward, I don't feel as though Doctor Who is the show that I believe Doctor Who was.
No.
But then again, I might have grown up a bit as well. So.
Yeah, well, I had somebody tell me today that Doctor Who had jumped the shark on multiple occasions. Now, in the first instance, that doesn't actually work.
Well, maybe it first happened in 1966, if
you can only jump the shark once.
Okay? Well,
then re-jump it. It's not like a played on a loop, you know. And unless although he posted a GIF of it, in which he was played on a loop. But but exactly. There are plenty of times on which you could say Doctor Who jumped the shark and then got very good again. Which means that he never jumped the shark. It just means it had silly patches. There's nothing wrong with that. Every show has that. He then reeled off a whole long list of things that Davies and Moffat had done. And I said, look, just because you didn't like them doesn't make it a bad show. It's just not to your taste. You know, that doesn't mean that, you know, maybe you've outgrown it. That happens eventually. It doesn't mean it's bad. Just not necessarily you anymore. And take what you can from each episode. A shift in focus, a change in direction, a character who died and then was resurrected as a Cyberman or whatever, isn't necessarily indicative of a drop in quality, just something that wasn't to your taste, but somebody else probably liked it. And Doctor Who, as much as you would want it to be, cannot be all things to all people. It tries to be, and that is why it fails. But it fails gloriously, and that's okay.
Indeed. That's probably a good time to underline what we've talked about so far. And just to ask Mr. Baldock, do you have any recommendations?
Yes. Stay in school, eat your greens, and if you're talking about media stuff, I've been pretty blank this last couple of weeks. I'm trying to get this novel finished, which has meant I've sort of stayed under. I will say that I keep a lookout for The Bridge, which is coming back in series 4 quite soon. And with that in mind, series 1, 2, and 3 are currently available on the old iPlayer thingy. We've seen 1 and 2. I've got 3 queued, ready to watch at some point. They're on there for, or as we go to press, probably about 3.5 weeks left on them.
And this what show is this?
The Bridge. The original Swedish version. The Bridge, for those of you who don't know it, is about a collaborative police effort in which there is this enormous bridge, the name of which escapes me, spanning between Sweden and Denmark. And in the very first episode, they find a body on the bridge. And half of it is in Sweden and half of it is in Denmark. And this is obviously deliberate. And because of that, the Swedish and Danish police forces have to work together. And it's all about that, and there's a whole conspiracy and various things happen. And then in the second series, they take this further, and then the third, and so on. And the fourth series is coming out soon. If you've never seen it, and if you are a fan of Nordic noir, you really ought to have done. But if you haven't, then I forgive you. It is absolutely sensational TV, compulsive, well shot, beautifully acted, and very funny in places as well, considering it's a crime drama about a serial killer and a policeman with a broken marriage. It's done very well. So give it a spin if you haven't seen it. And series 4 is coming out very soon, so keep your eyes peeled for that.
Good recommendation. I will recommend you see Avengers Infinity War because we'll be
just knocking my nose at it now, aren't you?
Because we'll be doing a podcast about that soon. And if you fancy reading something, there's a new Midsummer Murders on at the weekend.
Who is it?
It's Neil Dudgeon still.
Yeah, so it's still John, the brother.
The cousin, yes.
Who's his partner now?
His partner, forgotten his name. But Annette Badland is possibly in these episodes. If she's not, she's in the next series later this year.
Is she?
As the new forensic.
So, oh, okay.
Yes.
Interesting. Yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, she's she was so horrible in EastEnders.
She was, yes, she was.
Yeah. It'll be nice to see her doing something nice for a change.
Indeed it will. That wraps up this week's podcast with a K. I will be back next week with James McLean and Gareth Cavanagh. Well, we will be revisiting the topic of best Dalek stories with some interesting insights from Mr. Cavanagh. Until then, it's goodbye.
And goodbye from me.
This is a Beyond Caster Bruce podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterBruce.com.
You can tell by the confidence with which I gave you the overview of next week's podcast that we've already recorded it.